You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Good Sunday to you, and welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby, and I have a special co-host in-house today, Samia Khan. Thanks for joining me, Samia.
Thanks for having me.
Samia is a cheesemaker and cheese lover in training, currently working at Cato Corner Farm in Connecticut, so I'm very happy to have her here. And our show today is being sponsored by Whole Foods Market. Whole Foods Market is proud to support independent farms and small business in our communities. Here's what's fresh in their produce departments this week. Note, availability is subject to change. From New York, yellow plums, sugar plums, red onions, and sour cherries. From New Jersey, peaches, green peppers, eggplant, cucumbers, leeks, shiitake, mushrooms, spinach, arugula, red and green leaf lettuce, radishes, green and yellow squash, mint, sunflowers, and orchids. From Connecticut, currant juice and assorted sprouts. Wow. I almost couldn't say that all in one breath. So thank you to Whole Foods for sponsoring our show. And I'd also like to thank our producer, Jack Inslee, and our engineer, Nat Wiener, for being with us. So summertime. I don't know about everywhere else in the world, but in Brooklyn, it is hot, humid, and steamy. And from my experience at the shop recently, people have not been thinking about eating copious amounts of cheese. Or if they do, it's in the mozzarella or feta form, something very fresh, light, and tangy. But although summer's not the time to, you know, stuff your face with comfort food necessarily, summer is the most exciting and probably most exhausting time of the year for cheesemakers who are busy at work in hot, steamy cheese houses that are way hotter than the rest of the world, making excellent cheese. My guest today, Andy Hatch of Uplands Cheese, knows about that more than anybody because he's in the thick of making Pleasant Ridge Reserve all summer long. Andy, are you with us?
I am, Ann. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to.
So before we get started, you know, before I get started grilling you with tons of questions, I just wanted to sort of do a really brief description of transhumance and the tradition of making cheese in the summer, especially alpine cheeses like the ones you guys make at Pleasant Ridge. And so I'm just going to do that really briefly, and then we'll talk more about specifically Pleasant Ridge. But transhumance is a tradition that was born in Europe and actually probably other places long before that, where farmers would bring their animals high up in the mountains in the summertime to find the best forage and the best pasture for them. So in May, all the farmers, usually the bachelors, would tromp up the mountain with their herd and spend the whole summer up there. And in the Alps, they would milk the cows right out there in the field and pool the milk together and then bring it to a communal facility where it would be made into giant wheels of Gruyere and Comté. And the idea was to take advantage of all that sunshine and all the nutrients that it provided to the cows in the form of grass and then to the humans in the form of milk and turn that into something that humans could eat all winter long. So those wheels of cheese were made in the summer and then aged until the winter months when they would be literally kind of rolled down the mountain to market and, you know, eaten up as plain cheese or in fondues or over roasted potatoes as raclettes or, you know, you name it. Cheese goes in pretty much everything. And so though Wisconsin is a far, you know, distance from the Alps, the tradition of seasonal cheesemaking is alive and well at Pleasant Ridge or at Uplands Cheese. So Andy, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about Uplands Cheese and how you came to be a cheesemaker there.
Sure. We are a grass-based dairy and a seasonal dairy, and we were a seasonal grass-based dairy before we began making cheese here about 10 years ago. And so our farm already sort of mimics those seasonal alpine patterns where we milk our cows in the summer and then dry them up in the winter. So they're all having calves in the spring to coincide with the emergence of spring grass. And then as we get into the winter and pasture stops growing, we stop milking. So there are a lot of reasons a farm like that. It supports a more natural rhythm and a more natural diet for the cows. The carbon footprint is smaller. You're running less machines to harvest feed and mechanically and spread manure. You sort of let the cows harvest their own feed and spread their own manure. Either on the farmer, you're not in a barn all day. So there are a lot of reasons that farming like that can make sense. So we were farming like that for all of those reasons. And when it came time for us to start making a cheese, we wanted to select a variety that suited our farming style. And so we looked to the Alps, to the cheeses like Anne mentioned, Gruyere and Comté and Beaufort, because we were already farming that way. And so from day one, we've been in a seasonal cheese operation. So it's in tune with the milking rhythm of our cows. So we begin making cheese in May usually, and we'll wind up in October.
And so all summer long, it's kind of like a marathon sprint. You guys work hard in the summertime.
Yeah, that's true. I'm not sure I could do it year-round, but the days are longer. You've got the energy. It's sort of like a squirrel. You gather all your nuts, make big piles, fill the caves, and then we get to take it easy in the winter.
Nice, which I'm sure isn't exactly easy. I'm sure there's plenty of work to do on the farm then, too.
A mere, 40 hours.
Yeah. Absolutely. So tell us about the cows at Pleasant or at Uplands Cheese. You guys have sort of a special sort of blend of breed of cows, isn't that right?
Yeah, we're a little bit unusual in that way. Most dairy farms milk just a single breed of cow, and we've crossbred 9 different breeds together. And we've been doing that for a while on the farm in a closed herd, which means we don't buy in animals. So we're continually selecting for animals that do well on our farm. And so this blend has sort of generated our own style of cow. And it's one that does well in this type of system.
And what are some of the...
all year, and they need to be able to graze and walk a lot.
Absolutely. So I feel like Americans, when they think of milk cows, they think of Holsteins, those black and white ones. Can you tell us about some of the different breeds that are part of your herd?
Sure. Well, we use Holstein genetics. We also use Jersey genetics, which is another fairly common herd. Brown Swiss, most people are familiar with. We also use a few French breeds, and 2 of those breeds come from the part of the Alps where they still practice transhumance, Abondance and Tarentaise. These are not common in the U.S., and they sort of developed over thousands of years in the Alps because they're well-suited to that type of lifestyle. They can spend all day on their feet. They're much hardier, smaller-framed cows. So we use some of those genetics, too, which we've been happy with.
It's like humans, like when we, like Midwesterners, go up to like Colorado or something, you know, we get a little like woozy.
Right.
Those alpine cows are well suited to.
Yeah, we need some high altitude genetics.
Yeah. And so can you tell, so obviously your milk is like amazingly high quality because the cheeses are just delicious and like, you know, show their flavors and change, you know, throughout the years as they age out or throughout the year as they age out to different sort of profiles. But how do you see the quality of the milk changing throughout the season in the cheese room?
Well, our, cows generally follow a pattern in their lactation cycle whereby the milk components change, and that's predictable for almost any cow. Generally, they start out milking with more solids, more fats and proteins, and then those components dip down and then will rise up again at the end of the lactation. And we experience that in a magnified way because all of our cows are on the same lactation cycle. You know, so most dairy farms would stagger the calving cycle, so you'd have cows milking year-round, calving at different times, but since ours are all on the same lactation cycle, we see the milk change pretty dramatically. So that makes it, you have to stay on your toes to make a consistent cheese, because you need to make the cheese a little differently depending on how the milk is.
Absolutely. And so do you personally have, do you notice when you taste wheels from, you know, May versus wheels made in October, do you taste different flavor profiles that you can sort of, you know, regularly identify? Or does it more just vary from batch to batch?
Yes, it does. The most variation is batch to batch, and we test our milk every single day, and so you can sort of see that variation, not just in what you're tasting, but in the measurements we take on the milk itself. Fat and protein levels are the most basic measurements. I think, yes, May cheeses have some different characteristics typically than October cheeses. And one of those relates to fat content. The milk coming into October is getting much richer, and it's a more of a mouthfeel than a flavor difference, but it is identifiable usually.
That's really fascinating. I mean, because Samia and I were just talking about this before we came out on the show. She took a sensory evaluation class up at VIAC, the Vermont Institute for Artisan mm-hmm. Cheese, mm-hmm. And talking about how you identify some of those different flavors that are present. And in Alpine cheeses, those are especially apparent. Can you tell us a little bit, Samia, about your class and about the different things that you learned to identify as flavor-wise in cheese?
There was a variety of flavors. There's, you know, things you wouldn't even think that would be in cheese, like citrus scents or pineapple or, you know, caramel notes and all that sort of thing. And there's various categories, and you just have to sort of really take your time and, like, you know, smell and, like, let it linger on your palate and really, like, concentrate on it. Otherwise I just put it in my mouth. I'm like, this tastes like cheese. I like cheese. But then you, like, really think about it. It's really complex what goes into it.
And I've tasted some of those extra-aged wheels of Pleasant Ridge that get up to, you know, 16 months or so, and I always taste, like, pineapples mm-hmm. and, like, crazy flavors.
Now I do, for sure. But before I took that class, I'm like, this woman's talking crazy. I don't know. There's no such thing as wheat germ in my cheese.
Do you guys do those kinds of evaluations on the farm? Do you guys regularly sit around and taste cheese and talk about it? And or is that just, do you guys just kind of take the cheese home and enjoy it? And
are you asking me, Ann?
Yeah.
Yes, we do regularly. Starting when the cheese is about 3 months old, and then periodically until it goes out the door. So we look at it on a schedule, and yeah, we sit around and talk about it, make notes.
Interesting.
And so that's the way you learn about those patterns that emerge seasonally, or it's just by repetitive tasting.
Absolutely. And so what's your favorite age profile of Pleasant Ridge?
Generally 13 months. I think there's something happens right about then that is pretty special. I think there's another flavor pop, you could say, at about 8 months. But it's always going to be subjective. I mean, we try to evaluate the cheese objectively when we do these types of tastings. You know, we follow a protocol and make notes. But when it comes to enjoying a cheese, I think that's always going to be subjective. So my personal preference, yes, I guess it's about a 13-month cheese. How about you?
I like the 10, 11-month profile, like, actually right where it is right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just feel like it's gone from being that younger cheese with a little bit more, I don't know, I hate to, like, snappiness to it, mm-hmm. texture-wise, to being a little bit more dense and more smooth. It's just starting to show the beginnings of developing, you know, those little crystalline deliciousness.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, it's a little fruitier, a little sweet. But yeah, I prefer 10, 11, 13 months. I prefer that, I guess I would say, to the extra age stuff, where I feel like it gets it's really, really intense.
Right.
I like it. I like it right about now. So let's see. I think it's actually, we have to take a quick break. But when we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit more about your travels and how those have influenced your cheese making. So stay with us on Cutting the Curd.
Someone stole a kishka, someone stole a kishka, someone stole a kishka from the butcher shop.
Who stole a kishka? Who stole a kishka? Who stole a kishka? Someone call the cop.
Round and firm and fully packed, it was standing on the rack. Someone stole a kishka when I turned my back.
Who stole a kishka? Who stole a kishka? Who stole a kishka? Won't you bring it back?
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. Our show today has been sponsored by Whole Foods, and my co-host is Samia Khan. My guest is Andy Hatch, cheesemaker at Uplands Cheese, who are makers of Pleasant Ridge Reserve. That interim song was hilarious. Andy, I asked him to play a polka song because we were talking, you know, about Wisconsin. And
yes, I felt like I was back in Milwaukee.
Yeah. But then they're talking about the kishka, which is a little bit more of like a New York thing, I want to say. It's like really probably hard-pressed to find a kishka in Milwaukee. Kishka? Kishka is like, it's kind of like this liver dough concoction that you get at like Sammy's Romanian Steakhouse on the Lower East Side. They fry them. It's pretty intense. They're like a heavy, yeah, liver dumpling of sorts.
Mm. Probably not what you eat in July.
Yeah, no, again, not what you would eat in July. But so, Andy, I wanted to talk to you, too. I know that you've spent some time, you know, traveling around to different parts of these alpine regions where they make, you know, cheeses like Beaufort and also they have other winter cheeses. And I was hoping we could talk a little bit about your travels and what you've sort of seen and learned.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, well, I guess we could. Yeah, you start. I don't know all where you've been.
It was early on. It was part of my apprenticeship work. You know, in Wisconsin, they sort of put you through your paces to become a cheesemaker. You have to serve apprenticeships and take classes, and you ultimately take a test in order to get a license to become a cheesemaker. We're the only state, I think, in the union that does that. And so I did my schooling here at the university and a couple of apprenticeships and. We have a great infrastructure here as far as dairy farming and making cheese. There's a lot to learn. We don't have as much experience as the old world in aging cheese, obviously. And so I started taking trips over to Europe, mostly to learn about that end of the cheese making process. And
now, were these trips, were they sponsored by, you know, were they a part of school, or was this just kind of extracurricular because you wanted to do it?
This was sort of extra. This was extracurricular, right?
Okay. Okay.
Later on, now more recently, I've been going over and getting some help from the state and the university, and then coming back and giving presentations and sort of spreading the knowledge around. But early on, yeah, it was pretty hand to mouth, and just kind of scraped it together whenever I could get over there.
Totally, totally. So what regions have you visited, and what of those alpine cheeses have you made or observed being made? And
Early on, I moved around a lot and didn't concentrate on the Alps. I spent a lot of time in Norway actually making goat cheese, and they have their own transhumance up there. I was on the fjords on the western side of the country, and
oh,
they
wow.
send the animals up in the mountains in the summer. I spent a winter in Italy,
okay.
making pecorino, making sheep cheese. Then some time in France, some in the Alps, some in the Auvergne. Austria, Ireland, a little bit. I was like in my early 20s.
You've been everywhere.
I moved around as much as I could, and now later on, I've been targeting the Alps more. I know I saw you out there this fall.
Yeah, Andy and I got to go to this giant old military fort in the Savoie where they age Comté, and they had a couple hundred thousand wheels of Comté in there and coming from all the local valleys, and it was really, really pretty incredible.
Staggering. It's like being in a library.
Yeah, yeah, and just, yeah, all the work that goes into caring for those cheeses and the knowledge of the people that take care of those cheeses and how they know the flavors and the provenance of each and every one is pretty, pretty amazing. But I don't know if this is like super top secret or off limits to talk about, but in the wintertime in the Alps, they make a different kind of cheese. Something called a Vacheron, or the fall and winter, I guess, Vacheron Mondor, which is a softer cheese. It doesn't have to age quite as long. I guess it's more ideally suited to a different profile of milk, maybe one with a higher fat content because it's sort of a higher moisture and stinky, runny cheese. I've heard rumors that you're playing around with something like that at Uplands.
Yes, that's right, we are. And so actually when I saw you out there this fall, I was on my way. I was either coming or going to visiting some cheesemakers making that style of cheese in the Jura. And yes, I'm eating a wheel right now, one of the trials. We're hoping to start selling it this fall. It'll be called Rush Creek.
Rush Creek. All right. You heard it here first, everybody. No, I'm just kidding.
I haven't said it publicly yet. The Rush Creek is starts behind our barn. The headwaters of it is a spring on the farm.
Oh, wow. Very cool. Very cool. And so is it like the traditional Vacheron? Is it bound in wood, or is it...
Yes, we followed most of those precepts. Now, the obvious difference is that because it's raw milk in the States, it's over 60 days. So, yeah, and Vacheron is typically a 30, 35-day cheese. So, really, that changes everything. My goal isn't so much to replicate Vacheron, but to borrow some of those ideas to do our own thing, which is really the luxury of American cheesemakers, right? We can... pick and choose from those old world traditions, decide which ones make sense for us.
Absolutely.
Which ones don't. And sometimes, I guess, the choice is made for us, like the 60-day rule. But I think interesting things happen to a cheese like that when you have to take it out over 60 days. It inevitably becomes different than the French Vacheron.
Yeah, well, and you could never replicate a recipe exactly anyways, because everything's different. You know, the forage is different, the cows are different, the cheesemaker's hand is different, and so, yeah, it's always going to be sort of a, I guess it could be like an homage or something, but it's always going to be its own cheese.
Right, it doesn't make sense, plus it's no fun just to try to copy somebody else.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, you've got to hone your own craft.
But it was very valuable for me to go over there and take a look at what they're doing, because it's a completely different animal from the hard cheese. And it's so impressive that the cheesemakers over there have mastered both.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I really admire some of the Cato Corner soft cheeses. I could probably get some advice
tasty
while we're on the phone. But maybe that could wait. But it's been a steep learning curve.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Uplands cheese is different from a lot of other farms, say Cato Corner, like Cato Corner, because you guys really only focus on the one cheese, on the Pleasant Ridge, whereas a lot of other farmstead cheesemakers really kind of spread their curds around and make a lot of different cheeses. And I think there are benefits to both. I think, obviously, you know, a farm like Cato Corner, they're coming into the farmers markets, they're going to sell, you know, they have to offer variety. But I also think, personally for me, I think if I were to be a cheesemaker, I would focus on one, at least for, yeah, like the first 10 years or so, and then maybe, like, try to branch out, because it is so nuanced and so difficult just to master one. How is it? Can you tell us a little bit about the difference in process between making Pleasant Ridge and making Rush Creek?
Sure. Yeah. Everything is different for those listeners that know a little bit about cheese making. To make a dry hard cheese like Pleasant Ridge, you need to force as much water out of it as possible, and you do that by cutting it into small curds and cooking it to a high temperature and stirring it, and then soft cheeses like Vacheron, which has a body similar to Brie or Camembert, it's very soft and gooey, you want to leave a lot of water in. And so you don't cut it into small curds, you don't heat it or stir it as much. So that process while you're making the cheese is different. And then in the ripening rooms, it's also very different because obviously moisture drives all life. And so these cheeses ripen so much more quickly, these soft cheeses, than the hard cheeses, that you really have to stay on top of it. It's like driving a car 80 miles an hour instead of 30 miles an hour. You can go off track really quickly. And I believe me, I have a number of times already.
Yeah. So what is the season going to look like at Uplands, you know, going forward? Does that mean that you're going to make cheese in the wintertime, or does that mean, I don't know?
Whoa,
I know. Whoa, crazy.
Hey. We're unionized.
You cheesemakers, yeah.
I still have to ski. No, the cows will still dry up by about Christmas. Our plan, at least this year, initially, we'll start making cheese probably the first week in September. So we'll overlap with Pleasant Ridge. And so that'll be all grass-fed milk still, September and October. We'll be making Rush Creek at the same time as we're making Pleasant Ridge. We'll make a tiny bit of Rush Creek. And then in November and December, the cows, the pasture stops growing. They stay out on the grass, and they'll nibble it, even through snow. But their diet shifts more heavily to hay. And in those months, we stop making Pleasant Ridge, usually the end of October, and then we'll continue to make Rush Creek until about Christmas. Mm-hmm. And that'll be it. It'll be very small quantities, especially this first year. Once we get the hang of it, we expect to scale up. But we're looking really just at the fall.
Cool. When do I place my pre-orders? No. I imagine, that'll be a whole other can of worms, shipping a cheese like that versus shipping a hard cheese like Pleasant Ridge.
Yes, gosh. Does Hooligan, do you ship your cheese around the country?
Yep, we ship Hooligan.
And do you overnight it?
It's usually overnight or 2 day at the most. But yeah, you have to use like the ice cool packs and insulate the box as much as possible. And
right.
Yeah.
Right, we have it pretty easy. We except for these hot months now, we just put Pleasant Ridge in a box and UPS it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we'll have a lot to learn there too.
Oh yeah, packaging and shipping—the least fun part of cheese making. I'm convinced. It's like it must be somebody's passion. I don't know, but it's not mine.
Yeah.
How are you feeling this year? How's life on the farm? Are you totally are you feeling good? Are you got good energy going? Or are you totally
right now,
exhausted?
We just took a break from making cheese.
Are you making cheese today?
No, I'm not.
Oh, good.
I have my feet on the desk. I've been in the caves washing cheese, but we typically take a break for a few weeks in the middle of the summer. It's really hot. Give the cows a break, give ourselves a break. The cheese changes in this much heat. The cows are under stress, the milk's a little different. We have the luxury of being able to sell our milk when we don't want to make it into cheese. So that just started on Thursday, so I'm feeling great. I've been fishing and drinking beer and sleeping and doing all those things I can't do otherwise.
Oh, that sounds like what summer should be.
Yeah. But otherwise, it's been great. We've had a lot of rain. I don't know what it's been like in New York, but we had eight inches of rain in June, so the pastures are just perfect. It's almost in some ways a shame to stop making cheese because everything is looking gorgeous. Milk has been fantastic.
Well, hey, I think it's really admirable and really smart of you guys to do it that way. Because otherwise, yeah, it's like a marathon sprint for close to 6 months. Then that's a long, that's a long time.
Yeah, it is. It is. It looks admirable and smart when it rains. Of course, when it doesn't rain, then we feel foolish and frustrated.
Well, then take it for this year, because you guys definitely deserve to chill out a little bit.
It is hot here. I'm sure it's hot in New York, it sounds like.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. it's really pretty hot. But we're making do. We're hanging out in the shade at Roberta's. It's a good Sunday.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to tell us about your cheesemaking process and about the seasonality of Pleasant Ridge. And we look forward to our next well, the fall season, so we can get a little nibble of your of the Rush Creek.
Great, great. Thanks for having me, Ann.
Yeah, no, so thanks for and thanks for being here, Samia.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and
I've learned a lot.
We'll hear lots of good things from Samia in the future, and join us next Sunday for another episode of Cutting the Curd.